online, offline, bottom line. Sendoff.net.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Sundog, the podcast. On the show, we take an entertaining look at the news, trends, best practices surrounding the worlds of internet marketing, Web 2.0 development, as well as traditional media. And then we're going to focus on how all these things tie together to improve your company's bottom line. I'm Lon Keller, senior editor here at Sundog Studios. You're listening to episode number 8, Branding Evolution. And we bring our brand expert back for the show, our chief strategy officer, Mr. Greg Ness. How you doing, Greg?
Good. How are you, Lon?
Welcome back. You're on vacation last week.
Yes,
you had a great time.
Great time.
Birthday boy.
Yes, yes. Let's not talk about which one.
We won't talk about which one. Okay, we'll let you off the hook for that one.
Sweet 16.
All right. Well, it's got a 6 in it.
Let's just put it that way. Yeah,
okay?
Yeah.
And also on the panel today, our lead creative director, Eric Ista.
Hello.
How's it going today?
It's going just fine.
Very good. It's great to have you guys both here again today. Well, on the show today, we're going to talk about branding evolution. And one of the things that caught my eye recently was a recent survey done on brandchannel.com. They surveyed over 2,000 people, and one of the questions that they asked was, which brand had the most positive impact on your life? And the clear winner was Apple Computer.
Yeah, I mean, they were head and shoulders above some of the other brands that did make the list. Some pretty pretty big names on that list. You know, in addition to Apple on there, obviously you saw big brands like Nike and Google and some of those. And I was just amazed to see how far Apple was ahead of everybody else. Mm-hmm. And it's such a visible brand out there in the marketplace right now, but that's good for them. One of the things I think that, Apple has done such a great job at, you know, you can, as a marketer, you can do everything in the world you want to do to tell people about a product or tell people about your company. But, you know, really all marketing and advertising can do is get somebody to try a product once. Mm-hmm. After that, the product's really on its own, you know, and that's what Apple has done such a good job of ever since they began as a company is getting a group of people that are really crazy about the product and they turn out good products. I saw a review the other day and it was an independent review and it was just saying, you just wish people would write stuff like this about your company. It said, no matter what you buy from Apple, you're probably going to be doing pretty good because it's just, you know, they make really good products. So, wow, what a place to start.
Yeah, I was surprised to see Apple was number one because, you know, they don't do any sort of advertising whatsoever.
yeah, no kidding.
I haven't seen anything from them recently. But, you know, speaking of their advertising and you know, keeping that sort of that brand going, I'm always amazed. I think I don't know what the magic number is. You should really go back throughout their campaigns and kind of count how many ads, because they seem to have the magical number of just before it starts to get old.
Right.
They mm-hmm. manage to change things up a little bit and keep things fresh. And I think that's one thing that keeps them going. Because even people that may have had some sort of bad experience with them at one time, I think, might give them a second chance just because it's sort of a new feeling. It's
Well, it's interesting, like what you said. I mean, their advertising strategy is very much like their product strategy. Mm-hmm. Like you said, just about the time you're thinking, oh, this is getting familiar, this is getting old, you know, maybe all of a sudden they come out with a new update, whether it's to their product or to their advertising. Mm-hmm. They treat their marketing the same way they treat their product development. They're mm-hmm. always keeping you kind of on the edge of your chair. You always know there's going to be something new coming up, and you're just kind of anxious to see the advertising just in itself.
Yeah.
Just because it is something new and fresh. And
well, yeah, Apple's advertising is almost a product of Apple.
Yeah, it really is. It really matches the product. And I think that's what you see with good brands is, again, you know, it is, branding is so much based on experience. Marketing really starts the ball rolling, or can start the ball rolling. But, you know, it's a product has to live up to its reputation once people start using that product. And they've done such a good job of product development, design development, and that it's just really, I think, catapulted that brand to a leadership position.
Yeah. Well, Apple is a company that found itself on the brink of going under a few years ago, and this was during the years that Steve Jobs was not at the helm,
right?
And then, you know, a lot of the credit is probably rightfully so given to Steve for bringing that company back to the point where it is now. So, you know, they had, when they first started out, you know, we all remember the one commercial that aired in the Super Bowl. You know, back in 1984, right, introducing the Macintosh. It only aired twice, and everyone still talks about it to this day.
Right.
And you know, and Apple was very much at the top of the top of the heap when it comes to brand, when it came to brand recognition and popularity, much like they are today. But they found themselves bowing to the pressures of the consumer when they said, well, why don't you let other people make your computers? That way, you can get them cheaper. And so Apple kind of bent, and they went away from their true path, and it ended up hurting them. So they had to sort of reinvent themselves again. They took all the ownership back of all their hardware, and they are now well on the path of becoming one of the dominant consumer electronics companies on the planet.
Right. Well, another company, I think, that, you know, mirrors some of that innovation in their whole approach to their product and their marketing is Google was, you know, very high on that list too. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think it's amazing to think that, you know, it's only 5 years ago, that Google wasn't even a public company. Mm-hmm. They were just really, really far off the radar screen. And, you know, there were some people who really, information junkies who really loved Google because of the way the simplicity of the interface and how good it was in finding the information that they wanted out there. But again, they started with a core of advocates who really liked that that product that they were offering, and you know, look at the growth they've had. That's just unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. I remember the first time I saw Google. I'd been using Yahoo as my search engine of choice, and I saw Google, and it's just Google in a blank window. And
it's like, right.
Yeah, this is going to work.
Yeah. What's wrong with this
Who's
picture?
Who's going to use this page?
Right.
And yeah, I guess I was wrong, horribly wrong. Huh. But yeah, I use Google all the time now just because of its simplicity.
And it hasn't changed.
Nope.
I mean, look, yeah, I mean, that's that they knew what they had going. And, yeah, and again, you look at some of the others out there, and it's designed for a purpose. And of course, they've extended that brand now, mm-hmm. Countless ways, mm-hmm. and continue to do so every day. Mm-hmm. I'm amazed at the ways they find to, you know, make money. You wonder how far they can extend the brand, mm-hmm. without hurting themselves, but it certainly doesn't seem to be hurting them today.
There's not many doors that they're not finding a way to open up right now.
No,
but getting back to the brand channel survey for a minute, you know, I was looking over some of the comments that people wrote about, and some of the things that they talked about when they were talking about Apple was there's never a dull moment with that company. And another person wrote in, they're reinventing themselves all the time. Now, on the flip side of that, Microsoft took a pretty good beating in this same survey, and someone was quoted as saying they are the company that they most want to argue with. They've gone from a very innovative company to being stodgy and a follower of technology. So, you know, right, they're finding themselves in not a enviable position at the moment.
Yeah, one place they did come out pretty good is I remember part of the survey, one of the questions they asked was, you know, what brands have had the most profound impact on, mm-hmm. us, and Microsoft was certainly one of those, and it should be. I mean, obviously they've changed a lot of things, but I think it'll be interesting for a company like Apple and Google, you know, as they get bigger. It's always a little, it's easier when you're the underdog. People are kind of pulling, mm-hmm. for you. When you get to be the 800-pound gorilla, that you're on the radar screen, and everybody's, mm-hmm. you know, that's when you really, people start questioning your strategies but I think, you know, Microsoft has some rebranding to do and taking another look on how they get their, how they get it back. But, you know, they have made a significant contribution. I think the other thing interesting about that survey was, you know, it wasn't just 2,000 people. It was most of those people that they surveyed were in the marketing profession. So it wasn't like just, you know, consumers out there. They were asking marketers, you know, which brand, I think one of the questions was kind of interesting, which brand would you like to sit next to at a dinner party? You know, if you were sitting next to somebody from that company's branding effort, you know, that's where Apple really, you know, was number one again. And it's just because they've just got so much buzz right now and so many cool products. And
well, yeah, you almost have to feel a little sorry for Microsoft too, because it seems like anything they do is always going to be, you know, that they're trying to keep up with Apple, you know, branding wise. It just seems that, you know, everything they come out with, it, somebody finds a way to compare it to Apple and say, oh, they're playing catch up, or they're, you know, they're, just trying to follow Apple and do what they're doing right now. And, you know, sometimes it seems really obvious that way, but other times it's like, okay, how much, you know, like you said, once you're kind of up there, it's like, are they getting beat up now because of the, you know, they've been so big for so long and now here comes Apple and they're kind of the cool kids on the block. You know, it's kind of comparing the big brother to the little brother sort of thing.
Right. Well, one of the things I think that speaks to the power of branding, though, is with all the buzz that Apple gets and with what this survey showed, again, who has the most market share? You know, even with all these great products, yes, Apple's market share has been growing, but it's still just a fraction of the operating systems out there are, you know, the Mac OS. Mm-hmm. And it speaks to the power of a brand. It really is difficult to get people to move away from a brand once, if you're familiar with the Windows operating system, you know, that's okay. You know, maybe there's a few flaws there, a few things that Apple does better, but it's really difficult to get people to change. And that's why it's so great to establish a powerful brand, because you can fight off some pretty tough adversaries when you've got branding on your side, that familiarity that branding, you know, breeds. So
we've been talking, obviously, a lot about Apple and Microsoft. I want to throw out some different names of a few other companies here, and I want you to give me your thoughts on how you feel their brand has evolved, good or bad, over the years. And let's start out with Disney.
I think they've evolved quite well. They're definitely everywhere, being, you know, associated with ABC now and gosh, however many other companies they're a part of. You know, having a 2-year-old daughter now and watching a lot of the old Disney movies over again, you can definitely see the difference, you know, from the older ones like Cinderella and Snow White and that stuff to, you know, what there is today. And it was just Disney was such a simpler company back then.
What was a famous quote from Walt that he would tell his employees that it all started with a mouse?
Right. Well, you know, I think what you just mentioned is that, you know, Disney has had to go through an evolution as a brand because the original brand was so embodied in Walt Disney. When Walt Disney passed on, it's like, you know, they had to figure out how to become, you know, how to evolve their brand after Walt was no longer there. I can still remember, because I did turn the big 6-0, I can still remember Walt being on TV and introducing the shows. And you know, he was such a wonderful man, and you could just see the imagination and the creativity just kind of oozing from every pore. And so Disney's had to find a way to evolve, and they, you know, they're a very successful company, you know, I think they are evolving. And it's part of the problem is it's, you know, again, maybe the brand has become so big now, you know, as something becomes that big, it starts to lose its definition. You know, what is Disney now, you know? Apple's having a bit of that issue too.
Yeah, so. I also just forgot who the majority shareholder is.
Who is the majority?
Steve Jobs.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So much for getting away from the Apple topic, I guess.
Well, one thing with Disney, though, I will say that it's kind of hurt their brand for me, from my point of view, is a lot of the movies that I liked when I was a kid, they're coming out with sequels now that mm-hmm. are going directly to video, and they're just not very good. And so mm-hmm. it sort of annoys me because these are all sort of, you know, happily ever after stories. Well, to me, happily ever after means happily ever after, and there's not going to be a sequel. But then they're, you know, kind of putting these sort of haphazard sequels together, and it sort of cheapens everything to me,
right.
To a certain degree. So, you know, I think kids growing up now that didn't experience some of the original ones, it might not, you know, bother them as much because they're going to grow up with these sequels. But, mm-hmm. But yeah, it was sort of a cheapening, I thought, of what, you know, had been so sort of magical before.
I remember hearing a magical story about Walt Disney when they were building Disney World. It's not about branding per se, but it certainly reflects what that brand was. Mm-hmm. And when they were building Disney World down in the swamps near Orlando, the engineers came to Walt and said, okay, this is how we're going to build, you know, Disney World. Well, there are a lot of people just didn't believe you could build something this magnificent out of a swamp. And, you know, the engineers talked about how they were going to build from the outside in. They were going to build the infrastructure from the edges into the center. And if you go to Disney World, do you know what's right at the center of Disney World?
It's Epcot, isn't it?
Right at the center
the ball?
Right at the center is Cinderella's castle.
Oh, right.
Okay. And Walt said to the engineers, he said, no, we're going to build the castle first. They said, well, that's going to cost millions more. He said, no, in the end, it'll cost us millions less. Hmm. And they did. They built the castle first. And everybody who came to work every day, they lit that castle up. There was no doubt in anybody's mind what this was going to become because there was this beautiful, wonderful icon sitting right at the center of it. And I just think that speaks to how that brand grew and became what it was. And I hear that story and it gives me goosebumps. So
that's good. Here's another example of a brand that started high, went low, and is on its way back, and that's McDonald's.
Yeah, I don't know what the turnaround was for McDonald's. You know, I think they just, there was some, you know, bad press and, you know, all the health concerns, they started responding to that. You know, they, as a good brand should, they didn't just ignore it and hope it would go away. They started, you know, fighting back with PR and with products and with their marketing and talking about, you know, what they were doing to make their foods better. And, you know, and look how their menu has changed over the last several years. So it is pretty amazing to see how they've come back. And that's tough to do for a big brand like that. That's a lot of momentum to change, but the good brands do it. And yeah, I think most brands do go through the valleys. If they're going to get back up to the peaks, they've just kind of, you know, they've got to reorient themselves to grow.
An example of one brand, I guess I would say, that did not do a very good job of evolving when there was certainly opportunity is Atari. Mm-hmm. I mean, we all remember when they first came out, we all probably owned one or two.
I had it in television. The second place Atari.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, you know, Nintendo and, you know, the current players, Xbox, PlayStation, yeah. I mean, they all saw the opportunity and jumped on it. And Atari, for whatever reason, did not.
Yeah, it is amazing because usually the brand leader, it's really difficult to displace a brand leader. And but I think all those people saw some, they got the category started and just a lot of other people saw the opportunity of how far you could take that. And, you know, just some of the technology issues. But it deteriorated fast, you know, that market share. And usually you don't see that with a strong brand. It's hard to displace a number one.
It seems like if you're not going to be number one anymore, it's because of a lack of effort from the leader as opposed to the up and coming.
Well, I remember Reese and Trout had a book. It's quite you know, quite a couple decades old now, called Marketing Warfare. And it was talking all about, you know, the four basic types of marketing: offensive, defensive, guerrilla, and flanking. And, you know, they said if you're a market leader, you can really practice defensive marketing. And, you know, like traditional warfare, to overcome a well-defended position takes a big superiority in troops, or in the case of marketing, money and ideas. And so that's why when you become a market leader, it's really difficult for someone else to displace you, because you do have that entrenched position. And but that didn't seem to be the case with Atari. I don't know. I don't know that much about that brand, the story behind, you know, why it went the way it did. But
be an interesting read. We'll do some research.
It would be an interesting read. Yep. So,
how important is it that companies looking to expand their brand nowadays look into the world of social networks and use that method for reaching out to their customer?
I think it's very important. Like we talked about when we had the social networking podcast, just how I think the buy-in for a person's brand is it's a faster process, because you're hearing information from your friends and people that you trust, as opposed to directly from the company itself in most cases. So, you know, if these people that you confide in and you know, they are aware of your likes and dislikes, and they tell you about something, it's just that much faster of a buy-in, I think, from the general public.
Really, nothing has changed, because they've always said that the most powerful marketing is word of mouth marketing, and all social networks have done is magnified that, you know, millions of times. Mm-hmm. You know, that word of mouth used to take a long time to spread, just because the channels weren't there to make it spread fast. Mm-hmm. Now with social networks, you know, it's almost instantaneous. If people like a product and like what a company is doing, they can tell a lot of other people in a hurry. And so it's just that the tool has now, I think it's going to be extremely important. People, you know, advertising and marketing always has a built-in discount factor. You know, people know they're being advertised to usually, and, you know, they're going to be somewhat skeptical whether the claims in that ad or the, you know, anything about that product or service is really true. And when they start hearing their friends say, wow, this is, you know, I just got this, or I just got that, and this is really working out well, that just magnifies it. And it's going to be very powerful.
Okay. If someone comes to you, GL, and says, okay, I'm having trouble establishing a good brand, or I'm having trouble growing it, what are some of the basic steps that, you know, or questions that you would ask the client, you know, some of the research, you know, sort of an A to Z approach? What would you do to help enhance a brand?
Well, you know, the first thing you have to realize that it gets very expensive to try and fix a branding situation with marketing or advertising. That you've got to, the product has to be good first. It has to deliver a great experience. If it doesn't, and if you don't have all the other, the fulfillment channels set up, the service channels, customer service, those types of things, then trying to fix the problem with advertising or marketing is going to be extremely expensive and probably not work very well. So, you know, the first thing to do is to make sure that, you know, the distribution channels are right, the product is right, the service that you're giving the customer is right. And if you got all those things right, that's when to start working on the marketing and advertising, and have people, you know, make sure people know that this is a really great product or service. And so that's really the first step. After that, it's, you know, finding the right channels. You know, every product is different on, you know, whether you should be using online channels or offline channels or a combination or both. And, you know, what is your target demographic, and what tools are they using? What are they listening to, watching, reading? First of all, make sure that the brand experience is right, because anything after that is just going to be remedial and expensive if it isn't right. So,
Okay, very good. Greg, Eric, thanks for joining us once again on the podcast. Always great to have you guys here. And for those of you listening at home, if you would like to send any comments our way, you can send an email to thepodcast@sundog.net, or you can also give us a phone call. That number is 888-9-SUNDOG. That's 888-978-6364. And if you come across any articles on the internet you would like us to take a look at for future shows, you can go on over to Delicious. We have our own tag set up there for you. That tag is Sundog the Podcast, all one word. So for Greg and Eric, this is Lon Keller. Thanks for joining us, and we'll catch you next time on Sundog the Podcast.